GAA on Off the Ball.
We have Paul Pillar Caffrey. Does everyone call you Paul or Pillar?
Pillar, yeah. Unless my wife's giving out to me, it's usually Paul.
Oh, that's when you've done something very bad.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming into studio. We were just saying during the ad break there very briefly, hell of a weekend in prospect now.
Yeah, no, look, it's the weekend everybody looks forward to, and we've four big guns left for the weekend. And look, this Mayo Dublin rivalry has just caught fire again, and just as everybody thought Mayo were, the obituary was being written earlier in the season, and we just felt so sorry for them, and then here they are with their two hands back up, looking to claim a place in the final again. And I'm sure they'll give it a great shot at the weekend. And an incredible story this year of all years, like with James Horden coming back in and winning the National League, getting a bit of silverware and giving them a great boost. And, you know, then you would have feeling they were, you know, sure things to win out the Connacht title, and that'd be the best way for them to go. But no, couldn't do it the simple way. But what a resilient bunch. Incredible. And, you know, as a sports fan, you'd really admire the story of Mayo GA over the last, you know, 10 years or whatever. I think this is the seventh out of the last eight semi-finals they've been in, and they just keep on reinventing themselves and giving themselves a chance. And
because they looked done in Killarney.
Oh, stop.
They just did it.
Absolutely. It wasn't a beating. They took a hammering.
Yeah.
And they looked off the pace of it. They looked as if they were a done deal. They'd, you know, no inventiveness about them. They just looked, we're waving the flag here, we're out of here.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, a last game at home against Donegal, who I must say I fancied myself.
Right.
But no, these guys, they have something deep in their bellies that enables them to stay alive.
You had your dealings with them, obviously. Everyone remembers 06 because it was just such an unbelievable occasion.
Yeah.
You can kind of forget that before 06, it wasn't like Dublin and Mayo were playing each other all that often in the championship. Almost what happened that day in the warm-up and the needle and just the sense of occasion all the more surprising. I think it was like the 80s, 85 or 86.
Yeah, my brother John was playing back then.
And right, yeah.
You might remember, you're a bit younger than me, but like there was the John Finn incident. A guy got his jaw broken off the ball and nobody was ever made culpable for it.
In that Dublin Mayo game?
Yeah, and it was a draw in semi-final, went to a replay and Dublin won. So, you know, John Mahan would have been playing in them games, and so there was a... There was needle then, but then look, you know, obviously Dublin went off the radar, and then, you know, we didn't win one again till 95, and then we were off the radar again till we start banging Leinsters out in the noughties. And but look, that in my 4 years in charge of Dublin, that was the toughest day at the office. You know, don't mind the stuff that happened beforehand, like that was showbiz in terms of, I've no doubt. A fella called D. Brady was in the middle of that.
He denies it's him.
Does he? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's been known to tell a white corky now and again.
What are we basing it? Your insiders, is this Guard information you're using to track down D. Brady or what?
I'm just recently retired, so I can say what I like now. But no, I've no doubt that Mickey Morden and the great John Morrison, my old buddy, they had no knowledge that when the boys went over a photograph, the shout came, let's go to the hill end.
The management team didn't know.
No, absolutely not. No.
I'd actually believe that, because I would say as a management team, if you're Mickey Moran, you think, why do we want to risk distracting ourselves with this?
No. And look, it cost us the match, or it actually didn't, because you know what? We had a decent start. It was actually a very good game. We came out in the second half, played really good football. We're 6 points up with, I think, 80 minutes gone in the second half.
2-11 to 10 points after 47 minutes. So if it caught anyone on the hop, it was Mayo that it distracted.
Yeah, no, and I would honestly think that it didn't catch anybody on the hop, because when it went down there, did it. It just shows you the value of good warm-ups probably is negative with this whole argument, because neither team got a proper warm-up done. Yeah. It was just mayhem down there. Now, from our point of view, we had been told that they were going down the hill end. That was our designated end.
So when were you told that?
Well, they were out 3 minutes before us, so that's why they'd stagger you going out.
Yeah.
And they obviously went out photograph and then broke, and then some of our guys were out putting out
cones
you know. Yeah. And next day it was panic, pillar, Mayo going down our end. And I said, right, well, there's nothing wrong with that. I said, lads, what you want to do?
So you turned to the dressing room and
say, Yeah, we were in the huddle, and I said, lads, what do you want to do? And sure, at that stage, the fire was in the eyes and the belly, and they said, Pillar, we want to go down to the hill.
Did you count and say, you know what, ignore it, let's go to the canal end?
No, I actually didn't, because, and you know, my head, Joe, was a very good question, but my head, it happened before. Tyrone went down the end, and my brother John was playing that year, and was an All-Ireland semi-final, and you know what, Dublin went right down on top of them. And I just felt, if we don't, I was glad the players chose to go down top, because if we had to come out jogging up and up to the canal end, and then you turn around and don't play well, or you turn around and everyone says, what you back down for the game even started? And that becomes then an issue where, for the players themselves, no, this was no issue. Down we go on top of them.
You had to meet fire with fire in that environment.
Yeah. And that's sport at the highest end, and in knockout football, like, people do crazy things, and you know, nobody can do it because
everything's so process driven and you know, protocol. And look,
you get the email telling you which dressing room you were in and which end you're doing the warm up, where you were always told which dressing room you were in,
but you weren't told where you warm up back then.
No, there was a famous incident, because I'd know some of this stuff having been a guard who worked around Croke Park. But Armagh came for a game against Dublin, and again, they were shown to the dressing room, and they weren't happy, they wanted to go down to the hill end. And they took the label off the dressing room, went down and stuck it on the Dublin dressing room, because they had arrived at the stadium first. Now, this was when they were in the Cusick stand side.
Yeah.
But again, it created a bit of bad feeling or whatever, and you know, protocols came in afterwards or whatever. But yeah, it was a fun in games and build up to these matches.
And on the day, because we look back now and it's fun, and it's, you know, part of the kind of tapestry, and it's a nice talking point and stuff. On the day when you got wind that they had done that Mayo had gone towards the hill, were you angry? Because I thought you looked angry the way you went down and you gave, was it John Morrison a dunt?
Yeah, I suppose, look, you're down there and you're saying, this. I'm in my head saying, this is absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and we're in the middle of it now. Because I could see, look, nobody's getting a proper warm-up done. And then you're afraid, because fellas were dunting each other with shoulders, and fellas were lashing balls into Mayo, and Mayo were lashing balls into Dublin. Yeah. I felt something was going to happen. And a famous photographer said to me, Pillar, your stats man looks as if he's going to get a slap. And I turned around, and he wasn't far away from me, and I just, John Morrison, Mickey Moore, and were standing around him, and he was giving a bit of guff back, so I just took a little walk in between them and
gave the barge.
Brush shoulders or brush backs with John Morrison.
You got a one-match ban for that, actually.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I got two one-match bans in my day. One was for that, and one was for having words with a great Tyrone servant, Ryan McMenamin. He was sent off in a National League game, and he was coming off the sideline beside me. It was a floodlit game.
Yeah. The anniversary game?
No, not the anniversary. The first time the floodlits were lit, it was Russ and Tyrone that were rolled out in my tenure. The second one was Pat Gilroy, who was in charge.
That's right, yeah.
But I complimented McMenamin on what a fantastic defender he was, and he complimented me on what a poor manager I was, and I ended up getting a ban out of it. So that was the two bans I got.
Do you go and plead your case? Do you have to appear before a committee for the ban?
Stop, would you? Yeah. This, you're invited to go in and sit in front of a committee, and look, I don't think in the history any manager has ever got that, never overturned. Whatever with players and going to DRAs, I think managers, if it ever happened again, you'd be just taking the slap on the wrist, because I've been in three times and never overturned, and you actually don't even feel they're interested in hearing your side of it.
Because when the cameras catch it all happening, and it looks manic, and you know, so you're barging into Morrison, there's balls flying everywhere. Initially, the Dubs walk down, arms around each other, you know, marching towards the hill. Something they sort of did anyway at times.
Yeah.
They fed into the hill in a big way. It looked hot and close and manic at the time. I'd say being at pitch level, you didn't know where to look around.
No, it was, you know, very hard to articulate what actually was going on down there, because the hill were going bananas, the noise from it. You know, most people in the stadium were just couldn't make out what was going on here. This was just not something that they'd seen in a long, long time. And also in the middle of it, what I thought would happen did happen, and a Dublin player drop kicked the ball into a set of Mayo players, but it happened to be, I think it was the Mayo physio or dietitian or something that was on the pitch, a female, and got the ball smack in the back of the head went down.
It's not a good look for the game.
No, and you know what I mean. It shouldn't have happened, and we were part of it, and you have to take your slap in the wrist for it.
Did any part of you think, deep, deep down, on the day or at a later stage, geez, fair play to them all the same?
Yeah, I you know, you're all for a bit of adversity in his dressing room or a bit of madness or whatever. And you know what? I'm sure there's Mayo fellas who have dined out in that since 06 and continue to dine out in it. It's a, you know, it's a, between the Battle of Omagh and that incident, it's the two things that I've been asked most about, and I served 7 years with Dublin. And you know what I mean? So it does capture the imagination. It was a crazy moment in sport, and it, you know, unfortunately, the cameras caught it, so it's there for everybody.
Well, we'll get Dee Brady on the line at some stage and he can plead innocence. My overriding memory, I suspect a lot of people's overriding memory of the game, is the Kieran McDonald point. What about you? What stands out from that game?
Yeah, look, and even looking back at it, I would have had a little bit of experience with C. McDonald. Like, he was just one of those off-the-cuff players. He wasn't like anything that's... I'd nearly put Dermot Connolly in the same category as him, that he could do stuff that most other players can only dream of doing and wouldn't even attempt to do.
Technically gifted.
Yeah, technically. Yeah. Maurice Fitzgerald, he was up there with. And look, the score he got, it was just... You know, if you're to be hit by a score in a game that you'll forever have nightmares about, you know, I can live with that being the score. Phenomenal footballer. I was in charge with Nafina back in 99-2000, and we actually played Cross Malina in an All-Ireland semi-final. And of course he was the star attraction with that team that they had, and it was a horrible wet windy day down in Longford in an All-Ireland semi-final on the 12th of February in 2000, and you know, I think we won by a point or 2 points, but we had a man marker. A great bit of stuff for us. Stephen McGlinchey took him man to man that day and did a fantastic job on him. But it, you know, the weather of the day in a club level, that wasn't suiting a talented exhibitionist like Kieran McDonald. But what, you know, I still see that score often.
I was actually funny. I always remember being, because he was such a talent. I remember being at a challenge game Mayo played against. It was either Westmead or Longford. My dad, big Mayo fan, and we went down to watch it. You know, middle of nowhere. And you could hear, you were standing beside Mahan, you could hear everything that was being said. And all Mahan was saying to the players,
give it to him.
Give it to him.
Get it to him.
Give it to him. And part of me thought, I wouldn't like to be one of the other 14, that all I hear when I have the ball is give it to him. But that was how good he was.
Yeah. No, look, you know, one of those rare gems that comes along. And I'm sure they'd love to have him at his plum, talking out on Saturday night.
And the game itself, so Dublin 2-11 to 10 points up, 47 minutes on the clock. You must be feeling good then.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And we were in control. We were playing really good football. And I remember we were attacking and J.O. had a ball about on their 60-metre line into the canal end. And it looked like another score was on for us. And ball got intercepted. And next thing, bang, point. And it just, they were nearly gone. But in true Mayo fashion, they just, you know, they had one hand still up over the water. And
Andy Morgan got a goal.
Andy Morgan got a, you know, an incredible goal in its own way, because he wasn't scoring goals in them days. He was more often a defender playing out the field, and for him to end up, and Shane Ryan had a diving block and he actually got a touch on it. And I think if he didn't get the touch on it, Cluxham was going to save the shot. It was just, and their luck, the place exploded after that, and it was just kamikaze stuff, and we were fighting for our lives. You know, we had two chances to get draws and or edge ourselves ahead, and look, a wonder score did us. But amazingly, and you know, it's something that I think people will be talking about come Saturday night. Like, we had Mossy Quinn and Mark Vaughan, who were two very good free takers. And you wouldn't play the two of them together in the team. You know, if one wasn't playing, the other was in, or if you're taking one off, the other was coming on or whatever. But that day, our freeze let us down big time. And both of them had been very good. And Conall Keeney was the left-footed free taker in the team. But for some unknown reason, the freeze was just a little bit more difficult that day. And we only ended up getting 2 out of 7 of our scoreable freeze. And in a one-point swing, that was a huge... Something that we are... In most games, we're nailing 5 out of 7. And all of a sudden you come and you get a 2 out of 7 day and you say, Jesus, you know, small margins. But look...
Is that pressure?
It could be, you know. But I would think when I look back at the freeze, there was a margin of difficulty to each one of them. They just seemed to be... We didn't seem to be getting the handy one.
So in isolation, each missed free was okay.
Yeah, yeah. But when you clock up five missed frees out of seven, you're going, Jesus.
Didn't Vaughan miss a 45 late on?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a 40. It was a 45, but it was out near us in the on the Hogan Sand touchline. So
probably about 50 or 60.
Yeah, and he barely didn't get it over the bar. Like, and it actually came back out, and J.O. had a chance to slip it over, and somebody got a block on him, and that was it.
Was that the best chance for your team to win in Ireland?
You know what? I was on duty as a guard in the Lower Cusick stand 3 weeks later in the All-Ireland final, and the sweat ran up me back after 10 minutes when I seen three goals going in. Because
what Kerry did to Mayo.
And, you know, could Kerry have done that to us? I would like to think not, but maybe it could have happened like that. I actually thought we were still building as a unit. I thought in 07 we were ready, and we got to another great semi-final with Kerry. And I thought in 08 we were actually ready because we'd found a few new fellas, and Dermot Connolly had come on the scene.
Right.
And I thought that was our best chance 08.
That was when the bearded men from Tyrone showed up in the rain.
Yeah.
They were devastating that day.
Oh.
And weren't expected to be.
No. And again, look, what a lonely day. But that's a team coming with momentum, and that's a team coming through the hard road, and that's a team coming with a serious attitude. And
it was funny, it was around that period I remembered that. So you had started getting Dublin winning Leinsters again, and like, we remember these massive days in Croke Park where you have 70, 80,000 watching Dublin Laois in a semi-final Leinster, which seems like a different era now. It is a different era now. So you had brought the team from a point where winning the Leinster was a big deal to in 08, that's when it started to be said, well, they're winning Leinster too easily and they're not arriving fully cooked in Croke Park for knockout stages, and Tyrone had the momentum of the qualifiers. And
yeah.
That was your last day?
That was my last day, and, you know...
Did you know you were done?
Yeah, I did. I'd said to me, it's close confidence, that, look, I need to be bringing this team on. And after two All-Ireland semi-finals, you know, you need to be getting to a final and really seeing that you're getting closer. And the manner of defeat, an 8-point defeat in an All-Ireland quarter-final, you know, it just wasn't what we were about. Mm. And, you know, 10 minutes ago I knew that was me. I was going to announce it in the dressing room to the lads afterwards. Right. Some of those, so I wasn't going to wait for the, you know, the county board to sit and because the decision would have been, look, thanks, Pillar.
Yeah,
you've had a great attempt. You know, it's time for us to change direction. And I felt, you know what, I'll do the decent thing here. I'll step down.
That's not end on bad terms,
no,
almost.
No.
Do you think about that 06 semi-final against Mayo or that 08 quarter-final against Tyrone often now?
It always have flashbacks. And my wife does give out to me and say that my memory of the intimate details of the big days in sport is incredible, where... I won't say I miss birthdays or anniversaries, but I certainly wouldn't remember who was at these occasions as well as I would who was playing or who the danger men were or whatever. So, no, look, they were a huge part of my life.
Because they would have changed your life dramatically if they'd gone a different way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, I don't feel sorry for myself because, look, I was a normal guy. I wasn't a great club player. I wasn't a super inter-county player. I've no bags of medals to shout about. But there was a guy who got into coaching after I finished playing, and, you know, I took on the challenge of it and I enjoyed it, and I had a gift to surround myself with probably more talented people than me in management teams and getting the best out of people, and that's really what I enjoyed doing. So you know, I felt particularly sorry for Kieran Whelan, for example, you know, when his career ended and 14 seasons playing for Dublin. And this wasn't a normal guy. Like, this is Whelo, who was came in as a wing forward in 96 and lit up the place and played most of his football at midfield, and as a big 6'4" guy, like, and well built, you know, in the latter stages of his career, Kieran was struggling to hit 14 stone 8 every year. And, you know, I remember him talking to me, "No, Pillar, I'm going to step down, I'm going to walk," and I said, "Kieran, don't, we're on the cusp of something very special here," and, you know, doing a deal with him that I wouldn't play him in the early rounds of the National League till he hit his fighting weight, and then bringing him in. And he was so brilliant for us during that era. You know, some of the games he played in Croke Park, and, you know, with Shane Ryan, when we paired the two of them together, it was such exciting football. And for his career to pan out and him go in 2010, 14 seasons, never get to play in an All-Ireland final.
I know, when you see him sometimes on TV and it says Kieran Whelan 1996 to 2010, you just can't believe that.
And I remember we met up in the Palace Bar, I think it might have been the Christmas after he won the All-Ireland. So it would have been Christmas 2011. Was, you know, a few of the older had Shane Ryan and Mossy Quinn and Whelan. And Whelan said to me, "Pillar, how are you?" And I said, I was absolutely chuffed. I was back being a supporter, Kieran. I was the proudest man since my brother won one in 83, I said, that day in 2011. And he says, how are you? And he says, didn't enjoy it one bit.
Yeah.
It was still too raw for him.
And I'm surprised you were able to.
Well, I was gone since 08. So if they had a win in 09, it would have been raw for me. Even 010, I could see, yeah, look, this is a totally different team. It's not my team anymore. In fairness, the Patty realised and said, no, hang on, this I can't mould Pillar's gang into anything better than he had. So I'm taking the knife to them. So, you know, in 9, no, 10, it would have been raw with me. But no, 011, it was back to, hang on.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, this is, you know, I'm a Dublin supporter.
Famously, you were there on the day on duty.
Yeah.
Well, was it the Brogan spotted you in the photos and stuff?
Yeah, no, look, I was down pitch side because my job that day would have been escorting the referee off the pitch.
The irony of you protecting referees. Suddenly.
Yeah, yeah. Picked the right man for it. And of course, Dublin won, so there was going to be no hassle.
Yeah.
I actually congratulated him on having a very good match coming off the pitch. So I was still down pitch side when I got the referee back to his dressing room safely, and sure, the boys are on the lap of honour. And one of the nice things that I was able to do that day, and of course, breaking protocol, but behind me in the Cusack stand, me old selector, Davy Billings, had come down.
Yeah.
And he shouted, Pillar, Pillar. Sure, I spotted him, and of course, I got him out onto the pitch. So he was standing beside me, and sure, there was tears in his eyes. And Davey was such a, you know, heart and soul of Dublin GA. And it was lovely that he was there at the moment. And poor Davey passed away a couple of years ago. And I see the picture from time to time or whatever. And
there it is, there, I think, is it?
Yeah, and that's Davey beside me. And look at the pleasure in his face. And yeah, no, look. I was actually getting hard to hold back the tears myself now. It was quite emotional. And there's a couple of older stewards that are volunteers up in the Cusack stand, and they always give me a handful of sweets. And I remember reaching and getting one of the sweets and slipping in my mouth, that it would give me something to water my mouth for, because, you know, when they came around, it was a beautiful moment. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I feel sorry for that, you know, the Mossy generation, the Whelan generation. Yeah. They put a lot back into Dublin football.
Huge. Now, you know, for Mossy and Paul Casey and some of them, they were there in 2011. Now, they didn't actually get to hit the field that day.
They weren't at their peak years, yeah.
No. But, you know, they still got the feel and they have their medal, and they were part of a build-up for a final, and, you know, they got the team holiday and all that. The cream, as the fellow would say. Yeah.
So who were the ones that missed? Kieran Whelan missed.
Whelan, you know, Darren Holman missed, another great servant for Dublin. Shane Ryan missed, another guy that soldiered in boat camps. You know what I mean? They would have been the real hardcore. But when you look at Clucko, who was there and came through, the other one that I was thrilled for on a personal level that hung on and got it was Alan Brogan. Because he was very nearly gone.
Was he really?
Yeah.
For 2011?
Yeah. Yeah, he was very nearly gone.
Because he was fed up or because of his body?
No, because he wasn't seen as part of the plan going forward. And, you know, he had a huge impact. He reinvented himself a little bit.
He's Footballer of the Year in 2011, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, Alan, in our team, we would have been like the Kieran McDonald scenario with John Mahon. Get the ball to Alan. He was our best forward. He carried my team, you know, for a couple of years on his back nearly. Every day he went out, he was the go-to player. When he played at centre-forward, he played inside. So, you know, Alan, Pat demanded a different model.
Mm.
And Alan all of a sudden had to turn into an animal in terms of chasing back and tackling and getting turnovers and all part of that, more of the modern game than was back then.
Yeah. The text in, Pillar, you're a legend, a real Dublin GAA man. Thanks for laying the foundations. Nothing good is built on sand, says Bobby the Dazzler, up the Dubs. Plenty of texts like that coming in. You mentioned Cluxton
coming
through.
Don't read the abusive ones, Joe.
I won't, don't worry. I get all the abusive ones, yeah, you get the nice ones. Nice. You mentioned Cluxton coming through and Dermot Connolly coming through. Did you realise when Cluxton arrived that you were talking about a once in a multi-generational talent here, or did that catch you a bit by surprise?
No. In fairness, Cluxton got his debut under Tommy Carr in 2001.
Yeah.
Tommy Lyons came in 2002 and I was part of that management team. And Cluxton in the early days was this serious guy, didn't say an awful lot, and a little bit narky. Wasn't a guy that was into loose chat or having the crack. Very, very serious. And a little story in relation to Clucko. Tommy Lyons got ill before the Donegal Dublin quarter final in 2002. So Tommy was in hospital, gallstones, so he wasn't going to be at the match. So somebody had to step up to the plate. So Tommy designated that I'd wear the Bannister's bib that day. So it wasn't known. It wasn't public knowledge or anything like that. But I would have been quite proud. You know, it was myself, Davey Billings, and Paddy Canning. Yeah. You know, I hadn't bought in that I was the manager. I was a selector, a very different role. And my wife and kids were dropping me to Parnell Park, where we used to meet back then. And, you know, quite chuffed with myself. The players knew, because the day before we'd told them that, look, I was doing the line and no big deal or anything. Mm-hmm. So I arrived, wife dropped me in the car and gave her the usual kiss, and the kids all shouting at me and get out. And I'm walking with my gear bag towards the dressing room, and I'm met by Clucko coming with a big long face in him. And I says, everything okay? And he said, no, it's your fault, he says. The lads' heads aren't right. Tommy's not around. It's going to be shy today. Mm. And my bubble was fairly burst. So I go in, and there was a bit of giddiness, because that's the way it was. It wasn't a serious, so I had to bring everybody in and calm them down a little bit. But that's the guy Clucka was, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a serious guy, and that was 2002, so... He was never in for the chuckles.
Right, yeah. He would have been young saying that to you. That's talk for a young lad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, he was one of the serious guys from day one.
So even, I mean, as much as he's contributing on the field as a kind of cultural architect or whatever fancy name you want to put in it, having him in a dressing room, I would still say, is massive for Dublin.
Oh, yeah. Like, this guy sets the template.
Yeah.
And a bit like Keno in the United dressing room, it's not always because he's talking. It's half the time it's the way he's looking.
Yeah.
And the way he'd look at you.
I imagine so, yeah. I presume then you were delighted to see Dermot Connolly come back.
Yeah, on a personal level, I just think, look, this guy is different gravy. It would have been a shame for Dublin GA and the greater GA community if we didn't get to see this guy again. Mm. Like, nobody knows the reasons why he wasn't around. Nobody knows the reasons why he's back in. But you know what? And if I took Anton out of the Tyrone game last week, it would be, you know, class is permanent. This guy just looked so easy on the field last week. Mm. And he offers something different. He's a range of passing. He sees things that other guys maybe see but can't actually execute. Mm. And look, you know, since my Dublin days, I came back and I was manager of my own club, Nafine, and we played Vincent's twice in a semi-final and a quarter-final on the way to them winning championships. And we just couldn't handle Dermot Connolly.
I often think it's one of the great pities that the likes of the McDonald's and the Dermot Connolly's, probably some of the great days they have are at club level where they just run the show and we never get to see it.
Yeah, Dermot Connolly, some of the stuff he's done down in Parnell Park, like, you know, and again, we would have had Johnny Cooper on him. You know, our best man marker would have been up for the job, and Dermot would look nonchalant for 15, 20 minutes and then just shrug his shoulders and say, hang on, gets three balls and he scores 1-2.
Yeah.
Like, I seen him against Ballymun Kickhams down in Parnell Park. And again, John Small was on him, and John Small was doing what he does best. He was in his pants, he was man to man. Dermot was just, you're watching, and you're nearly watching this encounter rather than watching the game. And next thing, Dermot just did what he does. Left foot, 40 yards out over the bar. Right foot, dummy solo, bang, 40 yards out over the bar. And then a third point from about 60 yards out. It was just everybody, neutrals, even Ballymun people were clapping, saying, like, we just don't see this often enough.
Yeah.
And the modern game is gone. It's so hard for forwards to really excel in the modern game. Mm. Like, you know, the Gooch, even in the end of his career, you could see he was so frustrated and so pissed off.
He's miserable in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny, any time he's been in since he's retired, you ask him what the most important thing is for a forward now, and he says it's patience now, because you're just not going to see the ball for 15 minutes, which is a terrible thing. What about Saturday then? Like, watching Dublin this year, from afar, they look like everything's rosy and everything's going very well. They're winning by bigger margins. They haven't conceded a goal in open play yet. Yeah. For all the talk about the high ball, which any team will struggle with, and you can run at them the way Cork did and they'll struggle. For all that talk, they still haven't conceded from open play. People are saying, well, the impact from the bench isn't quite what it was. Talk to us about what you're seeing from the Doves in 2019.
Yeah, look, it's gone to script. You know, I think they had a later holiday this year. So I think when Jim sat down post 2018 and we're looking to say, right, what do we need to do differently this year? Because look, you know, at the level they're at, they have to reinvent themselves every year. They have to make it more competitive. They have to change and evolve. And, you know, taking a later team holiday was a big statement in that we're not going for the National League this year. We're actually going to rotate players. We're going to rest players. We're going to get the long-term injury sorted with whatever minor operations take place in the off-season. Everything would have been geared to being where they are this Saturday. They would have known that bar a complete disaster, they were guaranteed to be in All Ireland semi-final. So I would surmise that all of the thinking that would have gone on post-September last year was geared around, we're in the All-Ireland semi-final. What do we need to have done and what do we need to be seeing going forward? And I think they're in a really good place.
You didn't interpret the Connolly comeback as any some kind of panic on Gavin's part or some kind of worry about what they have on the bench?
I can only say that I don't think Jim does panic. I think this would have been a cold, calculated decision. Like, you know, Declan D'Arcy would be Jim's main man in there. He goes under the radar in a big way because you don't see him on the sideline on match day. But even people within the county wouldn't realise that Tommy Lyons paired Jim Gavin and Declan D'Arcy together in 2002 to train the under-21 team. So they did the hard yards with the 21 team. Tommy was still manager. I came in with Tommy on match days as a selector. But Jim and Declan D'Arcy moulded that team.
That's a long time.
And Jim is at it on the coalface since then. And Declan D'Arcy has been by his side every step of the way. So they would have an incredible relationship in terms of what they see. So it would be very cold and very calculated. And I think they would have sat down and discussed what's the pros and cons. And it's not a hidden secret. The impact from the bench, it had to be less this year because they didn't discover three or four new players in the National League. And look, you know, Berno, Brogan,
Onogara,
Kevin McMenamin, you know, Paul Flynn fell off the wagon. Like, they were all a year or 2 years older since they were at their best. So the conundrum was, look, there's seven forwards really fighting for six places, and that included Cormac Costello, who shone in the National League. So he pushed himself big time up the pecking order, but nobody else really did.
What matchups are you looking at then, or what are the big selection issues that Dublin fans will be looking at for the weekend?
Selection, you know, Jim is, despite bogey teams and despite teams being announced and all that, he's been fairly consistent in terms of, look, it's obviously going to be Cluxton and goal. The full-back line is definitely going to be Johnny Cooper, Mick Fitzsimons, and I would think Philly McMahon. The half-back line is...
Do you have any worries, by the way, over this full-back line? The weakest line in the Dublin team?
I'd like to have been in charge of the weakest line of Dublin teams if they never conceded a goal from play. I think, look, modern football, if somebody runs hard at you down the middle, they're going to create one-twos and they're going to get shots off. You know,
high ball is a high ball.
Like, high ball is a high ball, and anyone struggles under a high ball, you know. I think, look, the experiment with Rory O'Carroll probably hasn't come to the fruition that he would have liked. Now, I know there was extenuating circumstances last weekend. I think his partner or his wife had a baby over the weekend, and you know, it would have been tough for him or whatever, but Jim obviously had faith in him to throw him in there. But look, he had a rough first half. So I see that being the full back line. The half back line, you know, you're looking at Jack McCaffrey, definite. You're looking at John Small, definite. And the conundrum is, does he go with Keane O'Sullivan back at six, push James into midfield and leave Michael Lehrer on the subs? And that to me is the only conundrum.
Right. It's a good conundrum.
Yeah. And then look, you're looking at your impact subs. Michael Darren McCauley, if it pans out that James goes to midfield. Michael Darren McCauley, you have Cormac Costello. Paddy Small is an interesting one. He's come on in every championship game. He got a start last week. So Jim has obviously seen something week in, week out with him.
It's funny and Small. He kicked a wide against Tyrone, and Oisin McConville on commentary, I haven't seen a huge amount of Small, but he said that might be just the tendency Small has, which is just holding him back a touch. He's just liable to kick a wide that he probably shouldn't.
He's been injured with a hamstring on and off, and it has really held him back in terms of getting a run of three National League games under his belt. So in that sense, would Jim trust him in a 10 minutes ago in a 1 point swing game? I think you're going with Cormac Costello and you're going with Dermot Connolly.
To start. Off the bench. Sorry,
In terms of the pecking order. Paddy Andrews, you know, again, he's very trusted. I thought Berno Brogan did very well the last day. We haven't seen him all year.
Yeah.
And yes, he looked as fit as I've seen him in years.
He's leaner than ever, isn't he?
Yeah, he's changed his body shape. He was very clever when he came on. He went for his goal when it was only a half chance, but he had that confidence. He laid on another great goal chance where he was brave. So, you know, you wouldn't know. Maybe the 15 or the 16 to 26 is nearly going to be more interesting because Jim puts an awful lot of thought in who them impact subs are going to be.
And it's where Dublin have beaten Mayo in recent times. You know, It's in the melting pot and it's the subs bench that's come on last 5 minutes and made the difference. You know, that's been the winning of the game.
Yeah, no, and look, everything points towards, look, Dublin being undercooked, Mayo, I think, being overcooked in terms of the hardship they've had to put themselves through. Yeah. You know, best wishes out to Jason Doherty. Again, look, the cruciate, as that's been confirmed today, horrible injury for him to get at this stage. And he was brilliant the last day. And with the kickouts, you know, with Mayo, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
You know.
Clark or Henley for a start.
Yeah, I'd say it's obviously going to be Henley.
Is it?
Yeah, for the kickouts alone. You know, it's so important in the game. Clark's kickouts are too predictable and Dublin will squeeze his kickouts and put them under ferocious pressure, where Henley has the ability to throw it over Fenton and McCarthy at midfield and try and get his half forwards into play. And I don't think it's a decision that is a big decision for James Horden.
I'd
love to know what the injury was that Clark had, whether they just put that out to save the controversy. But I wouldn't think it's a hard decision for James Horden.
Okay.
I think unless he gets his kickouts out, they're going to be in trouble.
Clock's coming against me. I'm going to be in trouble here with ad breaks. In terms of any other matchups, there's talk of, so Keegan will go on Kilkenny.
Durkin and
McCaffrey's been talked about.
Yeah, I can't see them taking Durkin, you know, and doing that. He did great on McHugh the last day. He's a special talent. Jack's different, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know how you stop him.
Like, Jack will make three of these unbelievable runs, and I think it's under, you know, I think Kevin McLaughlin is probably going to start now with Doherty out, so maybe Kevin McLaughlin will tag him because he has legs. You know, who are they going to put on Fenton? You know, Kilkenny will probably have to sacrifice his own game if Lee Hegan is on him. Like, he has proven himself to be the best man marker in the game for the last few years. So, but again, look, Conor Callan to me is the real untapped player. I think Con is just ready to explode in terms of the talent that he is. Mm. We've only seen snippets of it. Mannion's had a very good season, so he's going to take a lot of watching. And Howard, to me, just makes this Dublin team. He just does all the unseen stuff so well, never turns over a ball, never looks flustered for a young fella. So they're in a good place, and I would know that there's no sound bouts. You're not getting to any of the Dublin players. Nobody's hearing nothing about them around the scene. This is just, you know, the way they are is the way...
Watertight.
Yeah. Complacency won't be an issue.
You're going for Dublin?
Going for Dublin.
I know what the heart says, but head Dublin as well.
Yeah.
It's been great. I mean, there's loads of texts coming in saying it's been great to hear you. Enjoyed the chat, so we must do it again sometime. Ahead of the final, one way or another, maybe.
Yeah, I'd love to see the Kerry boys there.
Paul Caffrey, thanks so much. Cheers.
Cheers, Joe, yeah. GAA on Off the Ball.